Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and I've got Hayden Croft here on FaceTime. Hey, Hayden.
Hi, Jeff.
All right, so Hayden and I know each other pretty well because I am very proud to say this is his third podcast. Hayden is the returning champion. He has done the Discover Indie Film podcast. He did the first one, if you can believe it. We talked about his film, New Age Old English, in episode 47, which was March of 2018, right when it was still called the Discover Film, and then we added the Indie later on. And then he brought another film to the film festivals that I program. He brought this amazing film, Last Wish. And so then we talked about Last Wish in episode 148. And now the third film for us to discuss is this film, Four Junkies. So Hayden's here to talk about Four Junkies. And I am proud to say that Four Junkies came to the Sherman Oaks Film Festival in 2019, the last film festival we did in person live. It was wonderful at the theater, played to a packed house. And that film, Four Junkies, won the award for Outstanding Short Film and won the award for Outstanding Acting for the whole cast. And I'm even prouder to say, I'm proud of all this, but the coolest thing is that Four Junkies is in the Discovery Indie Film TV series. So if you want to watch Four Junkies right now, before we even talk to Hayden about it, you should go to Amazon Prime Video, search for Discover Indie Film, and go to Season 4, Episode 3, which is a rock-solid comedy event. That episode is How to Save a Marriage, which is hilarious, and then this short film called Nailed, which is hilarious, and then Four Junkies, which is honestly everything at once. It is smart, it is funny, it is innovative, and I'm going to talk to Hayden real quick about Four Junkies as he's listening to me go on and on about his work. But I will just add that Four Junkies is this amazing, it could have been art house experimental too, because you definitely, you did an experiment. And I'm going to add, before I let Hayden start talking, that if you're a fan of the Discover Indie Film podcast, you know I normally talk to people about their whole history, what led them to become filmmakers. If you want to hear that podcast, go to episode 47, where Hayden really shared the depths of his story and his creativity. And by the way, that was the episode where you showed up at my home and you handed me your book of short stories.
Uninvited.
Well, you were invited to the home, but I did not know you were bringing a book. And and I will tell you, people, that I read your book and I should have written down the name. It's been 3 years, so I don't. What's the name of the book?
Kisses from Strangers in the Dark.
Kisses from Strangers in the Dark by Hayden Croft. And I highly recommend it. If you like satire, if you like intelligent short stories and essays, get that book. Go to search Hayden on social media and find that book, because it is like David Sedaris quality writing. It is. There's still short stories, man. There are short stories that I still remember. It's been 3 years.
Jeff, it's on. You can get it on Amazon. That's the main place I'd suggest getting it. Barnes and Noble. Some Barnes and Nobles you can walk in and still order it. You'll have to order it, but you can get it from there.
Yeah. But, so Kisses from Strangers in the Dark.
It's based on a Stephen King quote. Stephen King says of short stories, a short story is a separate thing altogether. A short story is like a kiss from a stranger in the dark. And so that's where I got the title name.
It's a great quote. And not only is he right, but yeah, that's a sexy thought too. Cause kisses in the dark, man, what's better than like not being able to see it just and touching.
You don't know where, you don't know what you're getting every time.
And I still should nag you. So we're going to talk about Four Junkies, and then you're going to talk about what, you've worked on since, because you've had probably year and a half, almost 2 years since you completed that film right before the Sherman Oaks Film Festival, right? I think we might have even premiered it.
Yeah, pretty much right before. Yeah, and then we'll get there.
Yeah, we'll get there. But you've got stuff after. But I will, as long as you know me, I'm going to nag you every now and then to like adapt a couple of those short stories. I know you're a productive guy and you're always writing new material. But man, do I want to see a filmed version of that short story you wrote about the family with the meteor coming to wipe out the Earth. And they choose to have a petty argument. I want to see that on film.
Yeah, that's funny because, see, everybody has their own favorite story. And I love that story. I think it's great. But you're probably the only one that's ever come in and really hit hard for that one. Like, you really want that story, you know?
I do. I hit pretty hard.
Yeah, I like that story a lot. The arguments and asteroids.
And I consider it very visual. I mean, most of your writing is visual.
Sure.
But that one's particularly visual.
Oh, yeah. But so anyway, I'm going to go and get my,
Yeah, by the way, did I mention we're on FaceTime? I should have said right in the, normally Hayden gets to come in person cause he is LA based, but we're doing this one by FaceTime. So he's getting himself in a better position at home.
Sure. I just want to, get my, I just don't want us to by any chance, you know, die out here or anything like that. That would break my heart.
Oh yeah, no. There's been podcasts that I've been recording, and my laptop wasn't plugged in, I actually BS'd the filmmaker and said, "Let me pause. I have to go get some water." And what I did is I went and got the charger to plug in the laptop because I didn't want to admit that I was not plugged in.
Okay. Yep. I'm all set up here.
You're good. All right. So Four Junkies. I mean, Four Junkies has been. We released season 4 back in, I think it was May 1st of this year. So I hope a lot of people have seen it. It is so funny and so smart. So I suppose I should just have you start off with the genesis of that idea.
I mean, it's one of those things where I was watching, like, you know, Seinfeld, I was watching Friends, I was watching a lot of 90s era sitcoms, essentially. Just you know, the kind of traditional,
Yeah, just the three-camera, single-set, multi-camera sitcom.
Basically, like a three-camera setup usually there's a couple locations, but it's usually mainly like two. It's like one apartment and then a secondary apartment. Like if you think Friends, like Ross and Rachel, or you know,
Monica, where Monica and Rachel lived, and then across the hall was the boys.
Exactly, yeah. So there's, like, the boys and the girls' apartment. Of course, like, a wildly unrealistically amazing apartment.
Huge living room. Everyone has a living room of a palace.
Oh, my God, yeah.
They need a room for the big-ass cameras.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing that I could ever think of that's, like, that outdoes that was Big Daddy. You remember with Adam Sandler? Who had, like, the coolest possible, like, New York apartment. Sort of neither here nor there. But anyway.
I love Big Daddy, by the way. I love hearing you mention Big Daddy. I think Big Daddy is such a good film.
Oh, yeah. No, Big Daddy's great. I totally love it. But, I was just watching that kind of show, and I was sort of thinking, like, what if I kind of juxtaposed a very more serious subject, you know, sort of like drug addiction, and had that, like, combined with a laugh track, you know, because a lot of times we see these very serious things, that could also be taken as funny, I mean, if you have the right sort of mindset for that. I mean, not that drug addiction is funny in any way, but you get the sense from these people that they all have problems. But to put it, you know, we're living in this era of opioid crisis and stuff like that, you know, I mean, that's a very serious problem right now. And so I really thought it was important. Like, I've had a lot of friends that have kind of fallen to this or that, like, type of drug, but mainly, like, opioids. And so, and I mean, especially over the past like 10 or 15 years of my life, I've known a lot of people that have just done like very sort of disgusting things in their pursuit of drugs and their pursuit of getting high. And so in this film, I wanted to just highlight how low people can sink to really get that high that they need, and how I don't want to say funny, but you know how funny something can be if seen under the right light. You know, I mean, it's because there's basically four characters. There's only four characters. There's a brother and sister, and there is a boyfriend and girlfriend. And I don't want to give really anything more away than that, but they're trying to score. They're trying to get heroin. And things start going wrong. And so...
And what you do also is, I feel like you also show the mechanics of the sitcom that would, the multi-camera sitcom that we all grew up on, which dominated forever, and how that format can just trivialize real life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Like by inserting heroin addiction into that format, even heroin addiction cannot overcome the power of this, of the multi-camera sitcom.
Yes, it's like if you're it's like if you're watching Seinfeld, but Jerry Seinfeld is like just a irredeemable heroin addict, you know, and Kramer is like, I mean, you don't even need to really change Kramer that much, you know. Kramer is just this wacky, crazy, like, you know, out of control man that busts in the door and just, you know, is always like interrupting thoughts and ideas that could potentially maybe save the group in some kind of way, but it's always brought back to how can we score and how can what we're doing right now better our situation, not in a good way, but in a way that helps us get high. And so, you know, I mean, that's what I was sort of trying to express. And again, it's a big juxtaposition between an actual story, because there is an actual story, you know, I mean, there's like this one thing happens, which leads to another thing, which lead, you know, A to B to C, essentially. I don't want to get into it, but it really just makes you think of how these people are connected yet totally disconnected, because they really do things to sort of go against each other in very many ways. I mean, there's a brother and sister, there's a boyfriend and girlfriend, yet they're all scrambled up because of the use of this drug.
Yeah, and if anything, I think you show the destructiveness of drug addiction. And I love that you brought up the opioid crisis, because the opioid crisis, because heroin was less expensive than opioids at a certain point, most opioid addicts do end up on heroin.
Yeah.
Because it's just more efficient. But I look, you know, the every handling of drug addiction in film and TV is sort of preachy and portrays it, whether it portrays it realistic or over the top, so bad for you, like Reefer Madness, whatever it is. It's not effective. No one's ever watched a movie about an addict. Like, no one watches Trainspotting and goes, oh, I'd never get high. It's just the opposite. Like, it's always, so in a way, I almost think that your juxtaposition and your refusal to be judgmental of your characters is almost a more accurate depiction, because I wouldn't watch your film and go, yeah, I really do have to try heroin before I go, before I leave this planet. Like, yeah. Like Trainspotting definitely has me, like, heroin is definitely on my bucket list, you know, like my 60th birthday. Hopefully I can go to a country where it's legal or something, but to give away too much about myself. But Four Junkies does not make me want to try heroin. Far from it.
Yeah, it kind of shows like the deep, dark depths. And I mean, I know you know what I'm talking about when I say that. That people will go to actually get their fix when they are addicted to opioids or, you know, methamphetamine or cocaine.
Yeah, it's funny. All this stuff starts with opium. Heroin is just refined opium. Opioids are just refined opium. It's this poppy.
I mean, it's really like it could stand in for any drug, but in this case, no. Like I've always been like a Requiem for a Dream, Trainspotting 2, you know, guy that it's just somehow heroin just always it's that's the big one. It always seems like in your mind when you think of drugs, you're always like, well, that's the sort of the king of the hard drug.
It is, right? I mean, maybe, yeah, it's the one that everyone works their way up to, or, you know, maybe LSD is up there too. But yeah, but like, I know lots of people though who would try anything and they're like, I would never try heroin. Like, forget it.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like, and I mean, that's not even really like the point. It really could be any drug. It could be meth. It could be crack. It could be anything. It's just the nature of addiction itself.
Yeah.
And how it can kind of destroy a group of friends, how trust can be completely subverted by the need for ingesting these drugs, you know, and I mean how friendships mean nothing if drugs are on the table. Like in this case, let's say heroin. Like drugs mean nothing if heroin is on the table. Somebody you've been friends with since you're 5 years old, somebody who's saved your life, somebody who's a dear family member, means really nothing. And I mean, it's something that's just very sad. And I think there's not so many of us in, I mean, my age group, I'm sure, you know, a lot of age groups at this point that haven't had some sort of experience with drugs and how they affect the friends around you, the family around you. I'm sure most people out there know at least one person that's used to be a real probably good guy or girl or, you know, I mean, and now has had some kind of life-ruining experience because of drugs. Not to say that the film is completely like a cautionary tale.
Far from it. It's definitely your instinct to entertain. I actually was going to ask you, so was it entirely about dealing with the topic of drugs, or were you really drawn to sort of exploit and mangle the sitcom format that you wanted to say, like, I'm going to make a twisted sitcom. Like, I'm going to be so loyal to the sitcom format, but do something with it that you're just not supposed to. Sounds like you were more into the story of addiction.
Yeah, I mean, I really did kind of want to cut it down the middle. I'd say that you're right. If I had to slice it a little heavier on one side, I probably did want to go with the story of addiction and how far that could push people to do these pretty disgusting things that we see in the film. But on the other hand, as we've talked about, I feel like I'm a comedy writer. You know, I feel like that's primarily what I usually try to go for. That's what I do, I think, the best. And so I did want there to be an aspect of comedy. I did want there to be a, you know, funny lines. I did. That's kind of why I did the juxtaposition of the background laughter and, you know, setting the whole thing up like it's an 80s or early 90s sitcom. I mean, that's what sort of sells it. It's like you're watching Family Ties if the family was addicted to heroin, you know? So it's like,
I'm laughing. I'm trying to laugh as quietly as possible because I could just, you know, everyone talks about the pitch. And, like, I could just imagine someone walking into a studio, like NBC Universal, and saying, I got a sitcom idea for Peacock. Family Ties on heroin.
Right.
I think it's just great thinking, honestly. I think maybe I'm more biased towards what you did to the format. Because, you know, I'm watching like a couple thousand films a year for the festivals. I mean, I'm like drowning in indie film. So I think your originality with formatting is what is so rewarding to a festival programmer because, you know, it's just so inventive with the medium itself that I probably appreciate that more than I appreciate the drug story because I'm watching so many indie films every year.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate that too. That's sort of my thing as well. I don't want to like I would never be the guy to say, well, hey, anybody can do like a drug story or anything like that. I mean, of course, that's not true. I just wanted to do something that's like sort of a drug story told in a bit of a different way. Approached in you know in a way that people haven't seen before.
Yeah,
and I honestly don't think most people have seen this before.
No.
So, it's something to check out.
All right. Well, I'm gonna move us forward because, I know, you know, I was actually privileged. Thank you. I think you sent over, or somebody submitted, actually, I think one of your producers submitted a rough cut, right?
I think so.
And then I contacted you about it, and we discussed it, and then you got it completed before the Sherman Oaks Film Festival, and I'm pretty sure that was like it's exciting to premiere something all the time. But that was November 2019. So yeah. Your festival experience with this innovative kick-ass film, you had about 4 or 5 months before the world shut down.
I did, yes. That's absolutely true. I mean, of course, it sucked, you know, pretty hard.
Yeah, pretty obvious answer, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, that's how it went with, I know I'm in good company on that answer, but there were a few festivals that I did get into right under the wire. The London Comedy Film Festival was one where I actually, Alex Ansel Yeager, who played Ken in Four Junkies, the brother character, he actually won a Best Actor award at that festival. And so, I thought that was, and he has that now posted up on his IMDb page, as you know, proudly posted, this is something that I won, which is, real cool. I'm actually working with him on something right now, which I maybe we can get to. But yeah, so I mean, that was a great festival. Not that, unfortunately, I would have loved to go to London and see it, but, you know, these things, even at the best of times, I might not have been able to go.
That's
to London.
That's a tough one to swing.
Yeah. Then there was another one, Miami Beach Film Festival, played, Junkies, I think. And that's like a late in the year to like 2019. I think it was like November. There's a few that I don't want to write off as any kind of like lesser festivals or anything like that. But, you know, like I think the Omaha, Film Festival let me in, the Spokane, Film Festival,
were these all before COVID or did some of these shift to virtual?
No, these were the ones that were right before COVID.
Right before, right. Because, I mean, you obviously had the experience of submitting Four Junkies to places before, and then COVID hit while waiting for, you know, the process to work out.
Yes, yeah, that is true. But there were, like, for example, the Oceanside Film Festival, which I've always said, you're the first person that ever took any of my films ever, with New Age Old English, back in 2017. I remember, in fact, that, like, I got a call from you personally, saying, like, hey, did you get my response? Cause I haven't heard back from you. And I was like, oh no, I didn't. And cause I had like two or three emails at that point, and somehow like the emails had got crossed up, but I was at a really sad point in my career, or like, you know, the career of submitting films to festivals, and nobody was taking my movie. And you were like, I love your movie, man. I want to take it. And so that, man, that really meant so much to me. And so, you know, when I got that, like, I was like, okay, this is awesome. And then after that, I felt like I just got like one after the other, but I'll never forget that, like, you were the first one that ever, like, took my film. So that was so cool.
And I've heard that from other people that, like, once you get in, you start finding yourself getting in all over the place, but it sort of takes that first festival for some reason.
Yeah. It's like, I think there's like some sort of like, universal law about that or something like that. But I mean, like, once you hit that sort of first jackpot, it feels like the rest come better and more easily. I think that it just works.
And it may give people, they'll trust it more if it's been somewhere else. And I'll add, if people want to watch New Age Old English, it is in the Amazon Prime TV series Discovery Indie Film, if you want to go to that's season 2, episode 8. So, hey, watch that film. Watch all of Hayden's work.
Definitely. I would agree with that, yes.
Yeah, you'd agree that people should watch your shit.
Yeah. No, I think that's a wise choice. But, and I love what you're doing too, like with the Discover Indie Film stuff. Like that's great. I watched the other four, I think, that you had going along with Last Wish and Kevin. And, remember Kevin?
Yeah, of course. Kevin's a great actor. He's in two of your films.
Yeah, fantastic. No, he put that up, and like so many people like went and saw it, like based on his word from that, which was very, very cool. And so, yeah, I mean, it was just a blast being able to, I just continually working with you, who's been a great patron of mine, and I really appreciate that, Jeff.
Like, hey, I appreciate the good work. What can I say? I think that Discover Indie Film just was born out of, I almost want to say necessity. Like the Q&As are fun at the festival. They're one of my favorite parts of the festival is the Q&A. But we got time limits there, right? And so the podcast was invented just to deal with the time limit thing of talking about work like yours. And then I was talking to all these filmmakers on the podcast, and all the people making features were like, I'm on Prime now. I'm on iTunes now. You can get me a VOD. You can get me, find it. Sometimes you can get it off Netflix. And people who made shorts, like their stuff was just like on their own website or, among the 100 billion videos on YouTube. Like there's just no home. So
yeah,
I forget who the first filmmaker I spoke to about it was, but I said, like, do you think we should put together all the shorts of all the people I'm talking to on this podcast and put it together as a TV series, an anthology of just great shorts? And this person's like, I'll give you my short. And I was like, okay, let's ask around. And so far, I think all but one or two filmmakers said yes. And the only people who say no are the people who like, and I still don't understand it. Hopefully they don't hear this, but like they say, my short was to try to get a feature made. And so I don't want my short on Prime because maybe that'll hurt its shot of being a feature. And I'm like, okay. And I'm thinking to myself, how could that hurt you? Like, it's got,
yeah.
Being on Prime should, in a TV series, should help you get your feature made, but it's not my work.
I mean, that's totally true. And I'm 100% with you. I like the only thing, and I think maybe you might remember when I was a little bit more like this, like I just like, as a new filmmaker, you kind of start thinking like, well, I don't want to give anything away like on social media, so then anybody can post it. And so then if I try to submit it to somebody and they're like, well, why should we pick it up if you can just go on, YouTube or Google, and pick it up anywhere you want. Of course, that's not really how it works, though. Are you getting Amber Alert?
I did not get the Amber Alert. I guess I'm about to get it. Now, is your phone vibrating?
Yeah, I just got a Silver Alert, missing endangered elderly.
Oh, damn it. I hate that. I hate
all
bad news. What can you do?
That's a bummer.
All right, well, here, let's did you shy away from the virtual festivals, or did you keep going once COVID hit?
No, I did want to keep going. It was just, you know, it's so hard to, well, first of all, I mean, it's hard to go to the festivals if they're out of town. Like, I love going to them when they're around here, like, especially yours. Like, yours are my favorite ones to go to. Because they're a lot of fun. You meet people. You see great films. But I mean, if it's like, say like in Oceanside, I love going to Oceanside, or I did, prior to COVID, and it's a really fun time. There's this barbecue place that I love there. It's like kind of just like an extra, you know, attraction thing that I do whenever I'm there. But, you know, once COVID struck, it just became a different kind of ball game, essentially. Like, you couldn't, like, people weren't being able to come in and see the show arts. You just had to see it via Zoom and Skype, all that kind of stuff, which, you know, I always love watching short films. Of course I do. And I did. But it's not, you want that in the theater kind of experience, you know, and it's hard to get that, it's hard to get that just watching it from your computer or even
you just can't, even if you can get it onto your TV, like with our three festivals that we did during COVID.
Yeah.
There was a back door to like, use the Vimeo app actually of your TV to watch it on a bigger screen. But yeah, film is meant to be shared in a theater. It's meant to be communal. And of course, when you're dealing with a communal disease, like, that just made it tough, made it really tough.
That's what I think too. I mean, I can't wait till we can get back to the days where we're all actually going to the theaters.
Yeah, well, I mean, in November, we're going to have Sherman Oaks Film Festival for a full week. We're going to have 7 nights at the Whitefire Theater.
Yeah, and, that's awesome.
As far as I know, there's no restrictions on capacity, but what can I say? I'll have my booster.
Yeah, no, definitely. And, I mean, just while we're on the subject, like, I've talked to you about Cock Blockula, right?
Yes. I think you sent me the first couple episodes, or just the first episode. Is that the main thing you've worked on since
it's basically
in lockdown? Because you're a writer. Aren't you you're a disciplined writer. Aren't you a guy who writes every day?
I write all the time, yeah. And the thing is that I don't know if I'm sure that I had told you this at some point. That I had been writing for a very long time, the story of, this man's life who I had known, who was a Jewish man, a doctor. He paid me to basically, ghostwrite sort of his life story. Because he grew up in Poland during the Nazi occupation. And so he...
And he's still with us. So he's one of the last of the last.
No.
No, he's not still with us.
He actually died earlier this year. Very recently. And I had known him for like 6 years, you know. And I mean, like, we weren't as close as any two people could be, but working with somebody to write down their life story over the course of a year or more really kind of can't help but get you close to a person. And so I kind of got close to his daughter who had told me that he had died of cancer. I mean, he was, you know, 83 years old. So it's not like, I mean, it's never okay to die from cancer, obviously, but, like, you know, he was one of the last survivors of this certain age in European history where I you know, I had written his life story. So now I'm in sort of this weird position where I do have his, you know, from the time that he was born, and his parents and his sister, and their trek across Poland, Nazi occupied Poland, into Munich, right after the war was over, and how they chartered a boat into New York Harbor, how they got a train from New York to Chicago, how they started life in Chicago. So I have this entire script that's basically a story of this guy's entire life with his family. It's like sort of a coming to America type thing. And I mean, this guy was so focused on getting this script made, you know. I mean, he was one of these kind of guys that just does not know how to fail. He was just like, we're going to get this script made.
Right. So he was relaying his life story for you to do, not a novel or anything, but a screenplay.
Yeah. Yes. And that's exactly right. Yeah. So, I mean, I went through, you know, as I'm sure you know, I went through probably about 17 different drafts of the script. And then I had, because, you know, he had many connections at, like, HBO, and he had one at Showtime, and he had one at A24 even. That all showed interest in getting this script made. And so they kept sending me notes, you know, like notes after notes after notes. And after somebody already pays you for writing down their entire life story, and then once you start getting notes and you have to start sort of renegotiating, like, okay, well, this is going to take quite a bit more time. Anyway, that's not the thing I would even like to focus on, but I mean, I think it became one of the best works of my life. You know, I think it became like a super, super, super solid, you know, a biographical work of this really, really courageous, really smart man that, like, just succeeded in America. And I mean, and so his death was just like 4 months ago.
Oh boy, sorry to hear that.
Yeah, it was really, really just so disappointing, because I mean, we had a very close relationship, and now I'm not sure what's going to happen with the story. So It's a real bummer. It really is. His daughter's trying to make things happen with it. His daughter actually is trying to enlist the help of a good friend of mine that does novels more so than screenplays. And I think that's like sort of what she's looking for. So I'm trying to sort of set them up between themselves, but yeah. Anyway, I mean, did you want to get to just no, we're not talking about
Well, anyway, so it sounds like during lockdown, you really devoted yourself to this biographical screenplay.
Yeah.
It sounds like a lot of work. I mean, that's a lot of work because you're both using your writing ability to be creative while also being true to someone's story. That's a whole different writing challenge.
That's exactly the truth, yes. And, I mean, I would say that really sort of kept me sane and just on a financial aspect, too, because at the time, like, I'm working a sort of a part-time job right now, but it's nothing that I want to go into or, you know, I mean, it's very sort of sideline. But, I mean, at the time, this guy is actually paying me for writing what I consider to be, like, one of the better scripts I've written in my life. So I was really proud and am really proud of that and want to hopefully find somebody, I mean, just in his memory that could maybe go on with that script, because there were a lot of interested parties. I mean, from HBO to A24 to, I mean, I don't want to keep coming back to HBO, but I mean, there was this guy that, well, I don't want to use any names, I guess, but I, you know, we kept talking to this guy from HBO that was like extremely interested in a story exactly like the one that we were telling. Like, he wanted to have like a kind of a punch up, like a dress up from like a separate writer, which I had no problem with at all. That was completely fine with me. But I mean, yeah, if we could have done that, I mean, we still might. I'm still in contact with the man. So, definitely it's something that,
well, I hope you still have access to these people, with him sadly gone.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely do too. Back to the room here, just getting dark.
So tell me, and then, so you were focused on that, and then your friend and lead actor from Four Junkies, Alex, brought you Cock Blockula.
Yes. It was actually more Andrew Baxter that brought me Cock Blockula, if I'm being honest. Do you remember him at all? I think you guys have met possibly once or twice.
Yeah, I definitely met him. I remember meeting him. He was always really cool. I met him, I think, at least two festivals. At least two.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he came with you for Last Wish. And I think he even said to me, "Are you that festival guy that gave those notes?"
Yeah. No, because that's funny that you bring that up, because you completely are that guy, and he was always kind of pushing me to, hey man, we need to cut this down a little bit. We need to cut it down a little bit, and you know, it's so hard to kill your babies, you know, as they always say.
It's really hard.
Hey man, it is. And so I had some of these, like, my favorite jokes, you know, or some of the ones that I remember, I think you had suggested that, like, they're funny, man, but, like, you probably should, you know, you need to chop. And so finally I was just like, yep, I'm taking Jeff's word for it, you know, like, let's do it. And so, yeah, man, Alex was very happy about that. And
that film, I remember you telling me how well it did. Once you guys got it into shape, you guys had a great run with it.
Oh, yeah. That's probably been the most successful film. I mean, that was at, Edmonton, you know, it was at Pasadena. It was at LA Shorts. I mean, it was at...
Which is funny because it's a very edgy film. It's very, it could be controversial.
Very much so. Like, my dad, when he first read the script, he's like, "Hayden, this is going to ruin your career." like he's not very progressive. I mean, I don't want to say he's not like homophobic or anything like that. Like, I'm not saying that, but he's just like kind of old school. You know what I mean? Like, he just doesn't like, that's just not his. And of course, like, after it did so well, he was kind of like, well, I admit, I don't really know what I'm talking about. You know, he's like, that's your bag. That's obviously what you're doing in life. Like, I don't know. He's like, I like Pixar movies. And, I mean, he didn't.
Saying, because he's kind of saying, it almost sounds to me like when, you know, when I'll say, I like this, but I don't know if the world's ready for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically, that's what he was saying. But, like, he's speaking from 1979, you know? My dad's a bit of an older guy. Like, he had me when he was, like, 43. So, like, he's, you know, he hates films that have a lot of, like, swearing. Can't stand them. Cannot stand them. Like, he almost just won't sit through them. Like, he'll walk out of a film. It's a bit frustrating, especially, like, if it's a great film, you know?
In other words, he can't stand Tarantino.
Yeah, pretty much. You know what the actual thing is, though? He does like Tarantino. Like, that's what is a redeemable thing about my dad to me, is that, like, if it's a really great film, he'll like the film. Like, when we saw Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, like, I had seen it before, and of course, when they say fucking shit and whatever, like, in those films, I don't really think about it, you know? It's like, I'm not really concentrating on it. But then when I saw it with my parents, I realized how much they were, like, swearing. And I was like, damn it, like, my dad, we're gonna have an argument on the way back from this, you know, just, like, my dad's gonna hate this, like, because it was when I was back for, like, Christmas, you know, and we were all gonna go see a movie, and sure enough, no, he's like, that was a great movie, I really liked that movie a lot, and I was like, really? You know, and he's like, yeah, no, it was great. I'm like, I didn't think you'd like it, and he's like, well, I didn't appreciate the profanity, but it was a good film.
Yeah, you know what's funny is that film is so good that I don't remember any cursing. I don't remember any hard edge to it because the story is so powerful that, like, the story,
yeah,
and the acting is so good that you just remember it as this great piece of work. And like, I don't even think of it like as great. And, you know, I'm a big Tarantino fan. I think we've discussed that. But I mean, I certainly associate him with a whole lot of bad language.
Yeah.
But Three Billboards, if you told me there's not one F word in it, I would believe you. Cause like in my memory, I just remember her performance and the emotional impact.
Doesn't even sink in. Let me ask you, Jeff, real quick, while we're on that note, did you, you said that, blah, 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 you were saying that you did not like, well, shit, now I just got thrown off. Okay.
What do you want to shoot?
I know,
do you talk about Cocula a little bit and then we'll jump into the next podcast?
No, something about Tarantino real quick. Well, just, okay. Do you just want to do the, I got these all queued up.
Do you want to do your four questions? I'll sign us off of this and then I'll start recording again for your four questions, which will be, your third go at it. Sounds like I should just go for it, right?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. We're ready. Before I jump into, I'm about to name a bunch of websites and social media handles for people to look up for the TV series and the podcast and the festivals. Is there a website that people should check out on the world of Hayden Croft?
Yeah, check out HaydenLCroft.com.
Right. H-A-Y-D-E-N, the letter L, C-R-O-F-T.com.
Yes.
Excellent. All right, cool. All right, well, now I will jump into mine, my spiel that I closed the podcast with, which is, you just heard me and Hayden Croft talking all about Four Junkies and some more projects he's been working on. Four Junkies is his third film in the Discover Indie Film TV series. You should watch it because it won Outstanding Short Film and Outstanding Acting for the entire cast at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival in 2019. Go to Amazon Prime Video. Look for Discover Indie Film. Just type in search and search Discover Indie Film. And it's in Season 4, Episode 3 with two other hilarious comedies. And please, give it 5 stars. Go on Amazon.com and give the Discover Indie Film all 4 seasons. Actually, each season gets 5 stars separately. I don't know why you can't just give the series 5 stars and you know, have it be all of them. But yeah, each season gets rated separately. And this podcast, subscribe and give it 5 stars. Give it a thumbs up, whatever, wherever you're listening to it. You know, give us a nice review and give it 5 stars if you're listening. And finally, I've mentioned the Discover Indie Film TV series on Prime Video and this podcast. You can learn more about both if you go to discoverindiefilm.com. And on social media, it's at DIFWINS. And Hayden has had films at both festivals I program. One is the Sherman Oaks Film Festival. That's every November. And you can learn about that at shermanoaksff.com. And it's at shermanoaksff on social media. And the other one is Film Invasion LA. I think New Age Old English, first time I met Hayden, was at Film Invasion LA, I think. And that one's every June. And you can learn about that at filminvasionla.com. And it's at Film Invasion LA on social media. And Hayden and I are going to say goodbye, and I'm going to stop recording. And then we're going to start recording again and do his 4 questions, which is a fun thing. We do a separate episode where he'll tell us favorite films, a film that's overrated, a film that's underrated, and something lesser known that people should look up. So you got to listen to the next podcast to hear that.
It's going to be great, too, because I've got a lot of them prepped.
He came ready. I mean, this is part 3. So without further ado, thank you, everyone, for listening. And check out the next podcast for more Hayden. Yeah.